All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. We'll start with Mr. Wandner. Is that correct?
It is, Judge. Thank you. Counsel for the government, your honors, Judge Lagoa, Judge Rosenbaum, Judge Wilson. Good morning and may it please the court. Having found trial counsel deficient in failing to introduce exculpatory evidence of a work computer that similarly did not show evidence of contraband in this case, the trial court ultimately erred in finding that that deficiency did not prejudice the defendant. This court, in its direct appeal decision denying direct relief, determined that this was a credibility battle between the testimony of the defendant who testified and the lead agent, Prevett, who testified on behalf of the government, in light of the fact that there was no forensic evidence showing guilt on behalf of the defendant. The only evidence was that somebody used a Wi-Fi connected to the defendant to conduct transactions. There was no testimony connecting it to the defendant
He testified at the trial himself. And
he did.
And did he say he never shared child pornography?
He did. He completely denied everything. That's what made it the credibility battle.
And the jury didn't believe him.
Jury didn't believe him because his trial lawyer didn't bolster his testimony. This case came down to a battle of credibility. It was his lawyer's obligation, which he acknowledged. He needed to bolster his client's credibility and denigrate the government's credibility. He failed to do that because he failed to introduce that evidence, which would have bolstered his client's credibility.
He did make the argument that the government didn't introduce the work computer, that the government didn't, and the government could have, but it didn't. It chose not to.
He did not make that argument, Your Honor. Argument never came before the jury. We made that argument in this proceeding. What came before the jury was that the government had talked to his employer. What did not come before the jury was that the employer did an evaluation of the work computer and no child porn evidence was found on it. That's the difference.
Did the government have to prove which computer that he distributed child pornography on?
No, it didn't. According to the case law, it did not. But that's not the point, Your Honor, with all due respect. The point is, when the defendant got up and denied that he did anything, the government's only evidence that he did was his own admission written into a 302. There was no recording of it, no written signatures. It was a pure credibility battle. The lawyer, trial counsel, knew that he had exculpatory evidence that would bolster his own client's credibility. He said at court that he was going to introduce it. He just forgot. He forgot. That's not only deficient, it's prejudicial. You can't forget to introduce exculpatory testimony that's going to bolster your client's credibility.
Even if he had introduced evidence that there was no pornography found on the work computer, the government never suggested that it would be found on the work computer. They never made that argument. Isn't that right?
Except, Your Honor, Agent Prevett, in his testimony, testified that in his own search warrant, child pornography is often found on personal computers and work computers. So they did put that before the jury. The trial judge, in his order denying relief, his order was flawed because he said, well, no, the jury wouldn't have believed that child porn would have been found on his work computer. So why is there evidence in the record that in the search warrant that child porn is often found on both personal computers and work computers.
The government never argued that there would be child pornography found on his work computer. Isn't that right?
It didn't argue that. It argued he must have pulled a fast one in doing this on some other computer. But the problem was there was no other evidence of any other computer other than his personal, which had no child porn on it at all.
Well, there's evidence, I believe, that's uncontested that there was child pornography shared using the IP router at his apartment.
No, sir. With all due respect, the router was never tested by anybody. The only evidence was that child porn was transmitted using the Wi-Fi. That could have been anybody at his apartment, anybody else who had access to his Wi-Fi. The router was never tested by anybody.
What did he tell Detective Watson?
He denied to the detective that he had ever conducted any child pornography activity at all. And matter of fact, his testimony was consistent with the forensic evaluation.
He admitted that he used BitTorrent.
That's correct. He admitted that he used BitTorrent, but
What is BitTorrent? It's a platform used to trade child pornography.
BitTorrent is a platform used to trade all sorts of materials, criminal, contraband, or otherwise. He never admitted he used it for any purpose other than for legal purposes. And in fact, when the forensic expert, Mr. Connor, testified, he testified that the BitTorrent had not been used for years, which contradicted what was written into the 302 about what he had said. In other words, Your Honors, what was written into the 302 and what the defendant testified in trial was in contrast with each other. That's why Mr. Bell, the trial counsel, needed to bolster his client's testimony.
So didn't trial counsel argue, and I quote, "Well, there was another computer right there, the work laptop. You haven't gotten any evidence that what the forensic results would be, but you do know there was some contact between the FBI and the forensic people at GE. And you do know that the government has the ability to subpoena and issue search warrants for this data. So the lack of evidence, well, maybe it wasn't this computer. It wasn't the computer that was sitting right next to him that he said he used. So ladies and gentlemen, more reasonable doubt." Why doesn't that take care of the prejudice problem?
Because affirmative evidence is better than omission of evidence. And the affirmative evidence that there was no such evidence on anything that he had connected to this Wi-Fi would have been bolstering his testimony to the denigration of the government's case. Now, in addition to that, had he requested the torrential downpour logs, which we requested post-trial, which the trial court erred by not giving it to us, but different standard post-trial, had he requested it, he would have been able to also introduce evidence that the logs, the ICOPOPS logs, were inconsistent with his use of the Wi-Fi during the times when there were communications.
Yeah, I don't read it that way. Yeah, I don't read it that way, because what it shows is that the logs were up for like a 24-hour period. And so it appears that that is just the way that those things work. Once you make the connection, it lasts for 24 hours, whether or not you go off or not, the connection is still there. And so I don't see how that would have helped your client.
Well, Your Honor, the problem is there's no testimony about that. There's conflicting testimony about what those logs say. Some of the logs say that there's ongoing communications and transactions going on even after he was not there and could not have been doing it. The problem is that nobody during trial or even at the evidentiary hearing post-conviction could show what those logs were actually showing. Had he requested that information, which under the Budziak case, the Ninth Circuit, 2012, had he shown, look, there are two different logs showing two different things. He wasn't here. He couldn't have done it when one of these logs was showing some activity. Agent Prevett testified he's not an expert. He has no idea what those logs are really showing. Mr. Connor testified he didn't think that, with all due respect to Your Honor, he didn't think that those logs showed what the government was trying to show, that it was some, you know, something the government was trying to reconnect, which is what the government argued. There was no testimony as to what exactly those logs showed. Had he confronted the government during his trial that those logs showed inconsistencies in when he was in Florida and not in Florida and not able to be conducting those contraband transactions, it would have also bolstered his testimony, again, to the denigration of the government's. In the end of the day, Your Honors, this is a case where his testimony needed to be bolstered. His lawyer had the opportunity and knew he had the obligation to introduce this evidence because...
What did his lawyer say at the evidentiary hearing?
He said him? As to the work computer, he intended on introducing the work computer. Mm-hmm. He just forgot. Mm-hmm. He knew it was going to help. In fact, he said... I could have raised reasonable doubt using the work computer and the ICOPAC logs. That's in DE 43, pages 113 to 126. He knew he had to use it. He said he was going to use it. He just forgot. I mean, you can't do that when somebody's life and freedom are on the line, and he failed. The fact of the matter is, Judge, Your Honors.
What happened to the work computer itself?
The work computer stayed with his employer, was never introduced, was never evaluated. Nobody ever looked at it because nobody doubted. Government never contradicted that there was nothing on it. There was no.
Could he have obtained it for use at the evidentiary hearing?
At the trial, you mean?
No, the evidentiary hearing.
Oh, at the evidentiary hearing? It was not in
Judge Toomer's evidentiary hearing.
It was not in anybody's possession at that point. I don't believe the employer had it. But the evidence was clear that there was nothing on it. Government never disputed that. Defense never disputed that. The fact of the matter is that evidence never came before the jury, and it needed to. And trial counsel needed to bolster his client's testimony.
And there would have. And there's a reasonable probability that the result of the trial would have been different if his if counsel had bolstered his client's testimony at trial.
Yes, Judge, there would have been material. That evidence would have materially helped the defendant. It would have materially helped the defendant by bolstering his testimony to the contradiction of the government's.
If there was testimony. No child pornography found on his work computer.
That's correct. Then there's no evidence of any computer he had access to with any evidence on it.
So that since the work computer didn't come in the evidence, we don't know whether or not there may have been child pornography.
No, there wasn't, because even the government admits there wasn't, because the GE, his employer, did the evaluation and found nothing, just like they did an evaluation.
That was a determination by the Judge Toomey at the evidentiary hearing?
Yes, and it wasn't contradicted by the government.
Okay.
So in other words, there was only any evidence of two computers that he had any access to, and neither one had any evidence of child pornography, BitTorrent, or anything at all on it during the time frames of this matter. So therefore, the issue of who had access to the Wi-Fi at the time when he was away, the computer from work, the computer at home, none of it showed any of those connections. That's why every bit of his testimony needed to be bolstered with every bit of evidence the trial counsel had. He failed, and it prejudiced his client.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wadner. You've reserved 4 minutes. We'll hear from Ms. Chang.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court correctly concluded that there was no prejudice in this case, simply because Neuheisel's counsel did not present direct evidence that the work computer was clean. And we do not dispute that the work computer was clean. The record already shows, my colleague presents it as if there's no evidence in the record that the computer is clean, but that's not so. At trial, defense counsel presented evidence through cross-examination from the agent that GE was going to do an examination of the laptop. The FBI was in touch with legal compliance about the laptop. The FBI could have gotten a subpoena and a search warrant, but did not. And as Judge Rosenbaum, you read from the closing, he marshaled those facts in closing to argue to the jury, and look, there was no evidence of child pornography on the laptop. So direct evidence that the computer was clean would have been cumulative of the evidence already in the record.
I mean, it would have been stronger.
It would have been stronger, but that's not the standard here. The standard is not whether defense counsel did the very best job and checked off every single box on the trial checklist. The question is whether his performance was, well, in this inquiry, it's whether there's a reasonable probability that that omission undermines confidence in the outcome. And it doesn't. And it especially doesn't because, as Your Honor pointed out, our theory of the case was never that he used the work laptop. No one ever argued that. Our theory was that he either used his tablet, although it didn't have any artifacts of child pornography, or he used some other device. And defense's argument here hinges on the assumption that there are only two devices, but the trial record shows there were at least three that he had. He had his tablet, he had his work computer, and he had his phone. And phones are capable of torrenting. Moreover, the record showed the FBI could have gotten a search warrant to his apartment, but did not. So there are any number of other devices, and Judge.
Did the government have to prove which computer he had distributed child pornography on?
No, Judge Wilson, you're right. And that's the next point I was going to make is regardless, we did not have to prove which device. We had to prove that child pornography was distributed, which we did. We proved that the child pornography traveled in interstate, through the internet, and that he knowingly did that. He admitted, I knew. that I distributed child pornography. I knew that BitTorrent shared when it was in my downloads folder. And yes, I recognize those videos that you're showing me. Yes, I recognize those titles. So Neuheisel has failed to establish that, he's failed to establish a reasonable probability that had his counsel elicited this extra cumulative direct evidence that the work computer was clean, that he would have been acquitted.
Okay, so let's assume that the government did not have to prove which computer he distributed child pornography on. Didn't the government have to show that it was Neuheisel that was connected to the IP address through a computer?
Yes, and the government did that, and the jury found as much. And contrary again to what my colleague presented, there was corroborating evidence. He confessed to all the things that I just mentioned. And to corroborate that, you have child pornography being downloaded from a single source, which is his IP address. He admits that that IP address is password protected, so no one else has access to it unless he gives them access. And the very version, not just BitTorrent, not just general BitTorrent, the very client that he used, views 5.7.0, down to the exact software version, was found on his tablet. So all of that corroborates his confession. There was evidence that it didn't come from his fiance, it came from him. I also want to correct something that my colleague said. He said that the district court found that there was deficient performance with respect to this GE computer. That's not so. In Magistrate Judge Toomey wrote on page 40 of document 57, his report and recommendation, the undersigned assumes that Bell could have introduced evidence about the GE laptop and that it may have been deficient for Bell not to do so. That is not a finding as to deficient performance. And even if even if he had found deficient performance, we would disagree that there was deficient performance. It was reasonable of defense counsel to rely on the agent's testimony. Yes, he may have forgotten to present direct evidence, but as I said, the evidence that came in is cumulative of the evidence that Neuheisel now says is missing. Testing the computer also would have come with a risk. So it could yield inculpatory evidence. And defense counsel said at the evidentiary hearing, that's something he really tries to avoid, is doing things that could make his client's situation worse. And in fact, he did that. In the 2255 evidentiary hearing, Bell testified about how he believed Neuheisel. Neuheisel said, I didn't do it. So he got him polygraphed, thinking that that would help him with plea negotiations. And that backfired because Neuheisel failed his polygraph. And so, especially given that experience, it was utterly reasonable for defense counsel to rely on GE's examination and rely on this cross-examination.
Except was that a decision that he actually made in this case?
He did. Yes, he actually made the decision not to get the GE computer examined, correct. He decided it was sufficient to rely on whatever GE did.
And he testified to that in the hearing.
In the hearing, correct. And counsel reasonably, it's not like he didn't have a strategy. He did have a strategy. And his strategy was a good one. It was a smart one in light of the fact that you have the agent saying that Neuheisel confessed, and then you have Neuheisel's position that he didn't do it. Well, that interview wasn't recorded. And that's exactly what Bell seized upon over and over and over in the trial. He also seized on the fact that there was no child pornography found on the tablet. The agents failed to consider this sex offender who lived 0.3 miles away. They didn't check to see who else in the area might have access to the Wi-Fi. And they didn't search the home for electronic devices. So counsel did all of that to bolster his client's testimony. He also presented his client's own contradictory testimony, plus a series of character witnesses. So this was a smart strategy given the defense fodder in this case. And Bell's representation fell squarely within the wide range of professionally competent assistance. With respect to issue two, it is obvious from my colleague's argument that his arguments about why why Bell should have gotten discovery of or inspection of torrential downpour all relates to his alibi defense. And his alibi defense is not within the scope of the certificate of appealability. The alibi defense was its own section of the 2255 pleadings. It was its own section of the report and recommendation. And that is not within the COA that this court issued. He's now bringing in torrential downpour to say, well, that should have been.
But even so, let's just assume for purposes of this argument, since we have the time.
Sure. So assuming that even if this court entertains it, the Neuheisel has not shown deficient performance with respect to what his defense counsel did with the torrential downpour.
I don't know about that. Haven't most of the other circuits have found that these peer-to-peer software programs are discoverable as long as the defendant can establish that they're relevant and material? I know you're relying on prejudice, but I'm asking you about the first Strickland versus Washington problem.
On performance.
Yeah. Most of the circuits have found that these software programs are discoverable as long as they're relevant and material, haven't they?
I don't know that, standing here, Your Honor, mm-hmm. but I will say this. Bell testified at the hearing that he is not a computer expert, yeah. and this is a computer-intensive case.
Yeah, these types of motions are usually granted.
There are a number of times.
He cites a bunch of cases in his briefs that indicate that these motions are usually granted.
Well, they have been granted, but for instance, in this case, it was not. And in the Schweier case in Alaska, for example, yeah. it's because the defendant actually put on an expert to say why the evidence was material. And that wasn't done in this case, even by
why
this
wouldn't
counsel.
It be relevant in this case?
I'm sorry?
Why wouldn't this be relevant, the government software program? Why wouldn't it be relevant in this case?
Well, there still has been no showing that it operated deficiently. What his argument is that torrential downpour yields false positives, that it falsely says, hey, there's child pornography coming from here when there actually is not. That's not what happened here. The software said there was child pornography, and they actually downloaded child pornography from that IP address. So it's definitely not relevant here because the software actually worked.
I thought his argument was that the logs say that there were communications going on between, between that IP address and
the undercover computer.
Yeah, right. During the period when he was in Cincinnati. And I thought that, at least as I understood the evidence, it seemed to me that it was saying that what happens is when the system torrential downpour logs onto the computer, it stays on for 24 hours. And so the 24 hour period isn't probative of anything with respect to how long the person on the other end is on, but I may have misunderstood.
No, what Your Honor said is exactly correct. That's what Agent Prevett testified to. And he provided that summary, Government Exhibit 1 at the evidentiary hearing, that shows connections are about, it's not exactly 24 hours, but it's about 24 hours. And he actually showed in Government Exhibit 4 of the evidentiary hearing, the log shows, it says, I'm attempting to reconnect. Oh, I'm reconnected now. Oh, I disconnected. I'm going to attempt to reconnect. I'm connected now. Oh, no, I'm disconnected. So the government proved that that's exactly what happens. And what defense is seizing on is this other log, the ICAT COPS log. And their position is that the ICAT COPS log shows something's happening. Some child pornography is being offered from this IP address. And that's not so. But the problem is, to this day, Neuheisel has not he hasn't carried his burden of establishing what that ICAT COPS log means. He presumes that it means that child pornography was being offered, but he has not established that. Even after the evidentiary hearing, defense counsel couldn't say what it meant, Agent Prevett couldn't say what it meant, Mr. Connor couldn't say what it meant. No one knows what it means. It is a cutoff
so
log.
Your friend on the other side of the aisle is saying that's a problem that shows prejudice because Mr. Neuheisel's trial counsel should have followed up on that and learned what it was, what the problem was.
But he didn't argue that anywhere in his 2255. He never brings up, and his counsel failed to research the ICAT COPS log. He says his counsel failed to research torrential downpour, which is a different system entirely. So he has to show what that ICAT COPS log means and that it means what he says it means. No one has done that. And that's his burden, not the government's. And for that reason, there is no prejudice. And on performance, nor was Bell deficient on the performance prong. This is a computer case. It's a computer intensive case. That's why you hire an expert. And Richard Connor is, as his as the record shows, he's testified in lots of these cases. He's done a lot of torrential downpour cases. He looked at that log and said, yep, I know exactly what that is. He never raised this issue and said, well, you should actually look into these false positives. You should get this researched. And so how could Bell be deficient for failing to rely on a renowned computer expert? If the computer expert doesn't raise the issue, how is that deficient performance on Bell's part? And that's why the United States argues it's our position that there was no deficient performance and nor was there prejudice. Unless your honors have any further questions, we'd ask that you affirm the order of the district court. Thank you. All right, Mr. Wandner.
Your Honor, thank you for giving me a few more moments. Counsel for the government admitted that defendant's case would have been stronger had
but that's not the test. That's not the test.
Well, according to Neely versus Cabana, failure to introduce evidence improving credibility is of sufficient gravity. That's what happened here. According to Wiedner versus Wainwright, an 11th Circuit case, if the defendant's case is, quote, materially improved, right, that satisfies the standard.
Yeah, it has to be materially improved.
Well, clearly exculpatory evidence of a device attributed to the defendant that does not contain child porn when there is no other device that does contain child porn in his possession, that clearly would bolster his testimony. It's clearly material and it's exculpatory. Your Honor, just to discuss some of the issues brought up by counsel, statements in the 502 were completely contradicted by Mr. Connor's testimony at trial that what he admitted to using the
the 302?
File sharing.
Say the 302.
The 302? Sorry.
In the 302, I'm sorry.
I just want to make sure I'm not missing
that. In the 302.
I was confused about a new form.
In the 302. What he allegedly admitted to was contradicted by what the forensic evaluation showed, that that system had not been used for years and was not used during the time frame of what they claim, government claims, to have been the conduct. So that's critical. Your Honor, Judge Wilson, I appreciate you pointing out the issue of the other, your sister courts, including the Boudzi courts from the Ninth Circuit. These peer-to-peer systems and their softwares are relevant, are discoverable, and they should have been sought by counsel. And I find it very interesting that counsel for the government would admit no one knows, as we stand here today, what those inconsistencies between the ICAPS logs and the other logs are showing. That's a doubt. That's a doubt that should have been before the jury. If standing here in front of an appellate body, no one knows what it means. Connor's an expert. He testified, I have no idea what these things mean. Mr. Prevett admitted, DE 32, pages 111 and 123, he doesn't know what those logs show. He is not an expert. So yeah, they testified, he testified what he thinks they mean, what Your Honor had adopted as a theory, government's theory, that it went on for 24 hours.
Well, I'm not adopting anything. I'm just saying
that's what their argument was.
Yes.
Right. But the fact of the matter is their admission here that no one knows what any of this means is a real issue. And a defendant shouldn't be convicted when the evidence supporting guilt is even unclear at an appellate
and
court.
And where is this raised in the COA?
Well, Your Honors, the COA includes the torrential downpour, which our position is all of this software, because torrential downpour is the software used to create all of these different logs. My suggestion to the court is perhaps remand to the trial court, ordering them to turn over, the government to turn over the software, let Mr. Connor go through it again to determine whether those logs do show that at a period of time where the defendant was actually in Cincinnati, somebody was actually conducting those transactions, which would clearly show he couldn't have done it, in conjunction with the fact that the GE computer does not show any of this transactions, that would certainly show prejudice. It doesn't deny the government any due process. It would give due process to the defendant. It would clarify what apparently nobody knows here, what those logs show.
And so before I let you sit down.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is it in the COA?
The COA had two components. One was the GE computer, and the other, my recollection of the COA, is that a failure of the trial counsel to request the peer-to-peer software programming, which would, in our view, include all of the programming from all of the logs, which are those that are inconsistent, which show transactions when he could not have been conducting them.
And did you raise this in the district court?
We did. We challenged Mr. Bell on all of this. In fact, we confronted him. Why did you not, even in the absence of requesting that software, why didn't you? Because he admitted he understood that the defendant was out of town during certain portions where the ICA CAPS logs and the torrential downpour logs show activity going on. Why didn't you at the very least confront the agent on those logs? Well, he didn't. He just completely dropped the ball and failed to do that. What he should have done, because Connor didn't know what those logs show, expert though he may be, he did not have that information, wasn't requested. He should have requested that information, understood after getting that software what all of these logs actually mean, and then confronted the government's case at trial.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.